Whether you want to escape the snow or plan it, Arias Medical has you covered. Try a rewarding travel assignment during the holiday season with Arias Medical Group. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com. Here's what's on tap for this episode. Our guest, Kendra Gagnon, enjoys a locally brewed cranberry orange radler while I sip on a Warsteiner Oktoberfest special edition. Kendra details all the subspecialties of pediatric physical therapy, her view on millennials, and we talk about her bearded dragon. Cheers.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Our next guest tonight is a pediatric physical therapist and associate professor of physical therapy at Rockhurst University. She teaches pediatric physical therapy and clinical technologies in their DPT curriculum, serves as the director of the Variety KC Go Baby Go chapter, and provides school-based PT services in a rural school district. She is a self-proclaimed tech junkie and is particularly interested in emerging technologies in healthcare education and practice. She believes parents are a child's first and best teacher, and that physical therapy is most meaningful and effective for children and families when it is carried out in a natural environment and embedded into daily routines. She lives in Northwest Missouri with her high school sweetheart husband and three young sons. Welcome to the show, Kendra Gagnon.
Yes, Kendra, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. I did a little background because when you read about someone and you say that you're a self-proclaimed tech junkie, you've got to go to their Twitter feed and their blog and see what they're all about.
Well, good. That's what you should do. So, hopefully you liked what you saw.
First question is always the hardest one. We get it out of the way first. What are we drinking tonight?
So I have I'm from Kansas City area. And so our local brewery here is Boulevard Brewery. And so I've got a cranberry orange radler. So in my Mizzou pint glass, because I am a University of Mizzou PT grad.
Well, so cheers to that one. I'm trying to hang on to October, being we're already halfway through the month. So this is a Warsteiner Oktoberfest special edition from 1753. So cheers to you, Kendra, for coming on the show.
Cheers.
All right, everything's super easy after this. That's the hardest question we're gonna ask. Okay. So pediatric PT, teach it, you do it. What is it? There's a bunch of different kinds, but before I got to PT school, I probably couldn't have named two of them.
So that's one of the things that I sort of love about pediatric PT is it's so vast and so varied. So I always kind of joke, I teach pediatric PT and I always kind of joke with my colleagues that teach on the adult side, they teach musculoskeletal or cardiopulmonary or neuro. And I always kind of joke like, what do you guys think would happen if we just had one semester to teach adult PT? And that's kind of what I think those of us that do pediatric PT are kind of tasked with. I personally am a early intervention and school-based PT. That's all I've ever done. I've never worked in a medical model. I've always been in educational and kind of developmental, kind of natural settings, seeing kids in their home. But there is as many settings for pediatric PTs as there are for adult PTs. I mean, there are physical therapists who see babies in the neonatal intensive care unit that are teeny tiny little, less than 1 pound, and all the way up to physical therapists that identify as pediatric physical therapists, but who have specialty areas in seeing adolescents and adults with developmental disabilities and helping people transition through the lifespan. We see kids, as I do, in schools. We see them in clinics, in rehab facilities. It's kind of a little bit of everything, and it can be a lot of variation. Some, from kids who are born with disabilities to kids who have acquired kind of injuries and conditions to kids who are, elite athletes and get hurt and need to be rehabbed back. So it's really exciting and fun, and there's lots of different things you can do.
That's a variety of settings and a variety of patient populations, and I think that's a way I've never actually heard it said, which is, what if you had just one semester to teach everything you need to know about adult? But is that something we're doing a disservice to a pretty large population?
Well, it's kind of a tough one because the reality is, and I've taught pediatric PT since the fall of 2006 now. So I'm in my 11th year of teaching DPT students. And, the reality is that, the programs I've taught in, I've had usually between 40 and 50 students in every cohort. And typically, you have about maybe 5 to 10% of the students that are really interested in pediatrics. So it's kind of a tough one because on the one hand, I think for that small group, know, out of a cohort of 50 students, you might have 3 to 5 that really are interested in pediatrics and are going to work in that world. But then you also have 45 that aren't. And really, truly, as a pediatric PT, I'm biased toward that idea that we need to be teaching our students more about pediatrics, that we need to be incorporating lifespan into other courses, that even if you're an adult PT, you need to understand that all of your patients once were children, and oftentimes their developmental experiences and past experiences shape kind of their development and their physical kind of health and the things that you're seeing. But the PT curriculum, you know, the DPT curriculum in general is so packed full and so vast, I think it'd be hard to add more. So, you know, like I said, selfishly, I'd love to see us talk more about pediatrics. But the reality is that probably, you know, it's probably not realistic at this stage in the game to add more pediatric content. But I always encourage my students that are interested in pediatrics to make sure that they're doing those clinical internships and kind of seeking out those additional opportunities to really develop their skills even outside the classroom.
In your intro, we alluded to that you believe parents are a child's first and best teacher, and that PT is most meaningful and effective for children and families when it's carried out in a natural environment and embedded into a daily routine. I mean, would it be great if we can pull that off for not just PEDS patients, but for all patients? I stole that from your blog, from online.
Yeah, I would love that. I mean, and that's something, you know, I think that's something I'm really proud. That makes me really proud to be a pediatric PT, because, you know, I think that in some more kind of what I'll call kind of traditional medical models, we are starting to really talk about things like participation and function in people's real lives. I think we're starting to get there, but pediatric PTs have been doing that for a long time. And I think that's something, like I said, that makes me really proud to be a pediatric PT, because I think we really, that's something we do well. We've been doing for a long time. I think we were kind of, I mean, obviously many of us were pushed to do that by IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, really in schools tells us that's what we have to do. I mean, as a school-based PT, I really have to look at how that child's disability or their physical impairments impacts their school day. It has to be all about function. But I see such exciting outcomes and such exciting things in that model that I think I would love it if we could do a better job of getting people back in their homes, of seeing them in their natural environments, instead of bringing them to the clinic and putting them on the proverbial stairs to nowhere, right? That we're working on with them on their stairs in their actual home or at their church or in their, you know, wherever they live their real lives. I think that's really, it would be so impactful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in an outpatient orthopedic clinic. That's my setting right now, my first job at a PT school. And I've got several patients, you know, under the age of 18. So technically they're all pediatric patients. And you mentioned the stairs to nowhere versus the stairs in your own house and motivation. Why do we stop doing that? You know, I mean, everything I try to do with a pediatric patient, I've got a 10-year-old right now. And what does he want to do when he gets there? He wants to play games. So it's my job to play those games with him, but make them functional and make them attack the things that he is lacking. Why do we stop doing that with adults? Where do we drop the ball? I mean, pediatric PTs should probably teach us a lesson.
You know, I think we could. I think, you know, what pediatric PTs, you know, the thing that also pushes us, I think, a little bit. Now, you're talking about a 10-year-old, and sometimes a 10-year-old you can actually get to do those, you know, I don't know what you guys do in outpatient settings, those 10 long arc quads or whatever it is you guys do, right?
Come on, we do something better than that.
Right, I know. I'm just,
but I understand what you mean.
But I mean, you know, you can sometimes get 10-year-olds, but when you work, you know, where I started my career is kids birth to 3, you know, you can't get a 2-year-old to do anything you ask them to do.
Right.
I mean, I live with a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old or sometimes a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old. And so you do have to do things that are play-based. It has to be meaningful for them. And so for kids, play is really meaningful. You know, kids play for the sake of play. You know, you can't just do exercises. You can't just do 10 sets of this or 10 reps of this. You have to be really meaningful. And I think too, you know, one thing that I've really learned in my pediatric practice, and I think I've gotten so much better at this with time, is letting the child lead. I always, of course, have a plan. Here's what I want to work on today. Here's what I want to do. Here's what I want to get. But usually have the child come in and they, you know, they tell me what game they want to play. And then I figure out how to make it about strengthening those quads or working on the core or, you know, whatever it is that I'm really trying to get at that day. And so it really becomes challenging. It's fun. I don't know why we kind of stop doing that with adults. But I think that, you know, from what I hear from my colleagues in the adult world, again, I don't work in that world, but what I hear from my colleagues in the adult world is I do think that we sometimes lose adult patients because, you know, maybe they aren't tying it. They aren't understanding how it ties to functional outcomes or their real life. life. And so if we could make that connection better, I think sometimes we get better buy-in from our clients and their families.
You mentioned a buy-in just a second ago, but you also mentioned the Stairs to Nowhere and motivation. And a guy by the name of Dr. Cole Galloway, who we've had on the show multiple times, kind of rages against that. He says he doesn't want to have people cook fake meals in a fake kitchen or climb fake staircase in a clinic. Why not climb their real staircases? So you're involved with Go Baby Go. There's your collaboration with pediatric PT and technology and motivation and doing something they really want to do. How'd you get involved with Go Baby Go? I love hearing these stories because it gets other people's inspired.
I mean, yeah, I love that you mentioned Cole Galloway. I mean, Cole is he's a colleague, he's a friend, he's a mentor of mine. And I mean, he and I really, I think our kind of worldview, our view of therapy and the role of therapy are really in alignment. And I think that alone really drew me, I think, to Go Baby Go and kind of the Go Baby Go program and philosophy. But really, my involvement in Go Baby Go started back in the spring. Well, I had followed Cole Galloway's work really most of my career as a pediatric PT. You know, he started doing some really fascinating things, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where he was putting babies as young as 6 and 7 month old on tiny little motorized robots and taught all of us that babies as young as 6 and 7 month old could be successful with power mobility. You know, that completely changed everything that we thought we knew about mobility. So I've been following Dr. Galloway's work for a long time. Back in the spring of 2014, I finally got to one of his Go Baby Go workshops. There was one that was local and I was able to get to it. And so I met him for the first time there. I took what I learned back to my my practice. I'm primarily a professor, but on Fridays I do kind of a half a day to a day of practice at a school district. And I had a little guy there that I knew was perfect for Go Baby Go. And so I brought it back. I got him to drive in a car. It was really successful, really fun. A couple months later, I actually started as a professor at Rockhurst in August. So I went to the Go Baby Go workshop in May. I started as a professor at Rockhurst in August, started my position there. And then in probably like October or November, I had some students that had gone to National Student Conclave, and Dr. Galloway had Skyped in to do a kind of a session. And he had, you know, Skyped in, and they found me and they said, "Oh my gosh, have you heard of Baby Go to the workshop? I'm doing it." And so my students at Rockhurst were like, "We want to do it here." And that's really what led to the takeoff of our Go Baby Go chapter. So it's been, our chapter has been really successful now in the 2 years, not even 2 years, the year and a half that we've been going. We've done, I think we're at about 70 cars now. We're getting ready to do a big community workshop where we do 20 more. Our program was really started by students, and it's a very much a student-led, is kind of a grassroots student-led effort. I have the pleasure of directing and coordinating it, but I have an amazing team of not only physical therapy students, but occupational therapy students and engineering students that work together. And so to do Go Baby Go, and since we got started, I mean, we have really connected with a lot of the other Go Baby Go chapters across the country, some of the bigger ones, University of Central Florida, Cleveland State, of course, the University of Delaware chapter. You know, there's, I've talked a lot with Go Baby Go chapter director at Marymount, Sky Donovan, who I know you're familiar with as well. It's just such a great program and just a fun network of people. And it's so awesome because, you know, when you're a pediatric PT faculty, most of the time, as we talked about, there's only one class usually in pediatrics. So you oftentimes are kind of the only pediatrics expert on faculty. So you have all these colleagues, and I mean, I have great colleagues and great friends, but the Go Baby Go people are my people. So I love to kind of get together with them at conferences and share messages and stories and resources, because it's like, these are my people. You know, these guys kind of get it and see rehab and physical therapy and children and families and movement in a really similar way than I do. And it's really fun.
Doing an event that we just did with Marymount, and Sky Donovan was the person who put that on. We did a 12 car build, and we'll have an episode. Yeah. We recorded an episode during that. And it was cool. This is like a byproduct of it, which was being able to see the community, the people who came in and volunteered, those people seeing what physical therapy is about and what it can be, and kind of watching the physical therapist figure out the seating and mobility component of putting the butt to the plastic, as one of my professors would call it. And it was a great public service announcement, unintended originally, for the field of physical therapy. Is a lot of times you just hear that eureka moment with a community member. They go, physical therapists know that, or you can do that, and you're showing them exactly what you know and exactly what you can do. Yeah. But you're not jamming it down your throat. You're saying, here's how we solve problems. Yes, we can do this for you too.
I think what I love so much about Go Baby Go too is it's just something that everybody gets. You know, from my 9-year-old son, who loves to participate in a Go Baby Go build as much as anybody, to families with children with disabilities, to students, to community members who maybe really don't, like you said, don't know much about physical therapy or any of, you know, everybody kind of gets it. Modifying the cars, it's a very kind of real and very tangible thing that you do. It doesn't take a really long time. You know, you can get it done within a few hours. Yeah. So it's just this thing that everybody can come together and do it. And then the kid comes and sits in the car and hits the button and makes it go. And you kind of get that, the whole full circle experience kind of all happens. And you, it's, it is such a kind of an aha moment for everyone. And it's such a fun way to show people of all, you know, again, in my specific example, you know, I really love how it helps our students come together, and our physical therapy students and our occupational therapy students and our engineering students come together and really share their knowledge. And it becomes like an aha moment for them too, because now the engineers, you know, they realize, okay, these physical therapists, they understand posture and movement and disability. And the PT students are going, okay, so these engineers, they understand mechanics and electrical, and we put it all together and it's go, baby, go.
That's perfect. And it's go, baby, go. That's it.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back with Kendra, we'll want to talk about technology and innovations in healthcare and how we can put those things together more often. GoBabyGo is one example. I want to talk more about that on the other side of the break with Kendra on the PT Podcast. Don't move.
The PT Podcast. We stand for life, liberty, and beer. Plus, you know, physical therapy and stuff.
Introducing EcoPro pillow covers. Good for the environment and your clinic's bottom line. EcoPro pillow covers are the clinic pillowcase replacement designed to be wiped clean just like your treatment tables. Each EcoPro pillow cover saves you 2,600 gallons of water per year, time spent laundering pillowcases, and the money involved with clinic laundry, with no special cleaner required. A special deal for Pintcast listeners. When you order online at EcoProPillows.com, you'll get free shipping on any size order with the promo code Pintcast. EcoPro pillow covers, created by PTs for PTs. Considering a travel assignment over the holidays, or ready to escape the cold weather for some winter sunshine? Arias Medical Group is the leading healthcare staffing agency, offering travel and full-time career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com.
This is the PT Pintcast.
And we're back in the PT Pintcast. We are talking pediatric PT with Kendra Gagnon. I went to Urban Dictionary because I wasn't sure about this in your bio, but you have a bearded dragon.
I do, indeed.
You put that in your own bio that came before your interview, and I knew I was going to bring that up. And I went to Urban Dictionary, and that says one thing, but I'm guessing you're talking about something else.
No, I actually have an animal. I have three boys, age 9, 6, and 3. And my oldest is allergic to dogs. So we currently have a bearded dragon.
What is a bearded dragon?
It's a lizard.
Oh.
It's a lizard.
I mean, I was guessing something like that. But why is it like the thing from Jurassic Park with the thing around its neck? Or
kind of, yeah. It kind of puffs out. It's little, though. It's not that, you know, it's, I don't know. He's maybe like 12, 15 inches long. So we have a bearded dragon. We just got a kitty about a month ago. We kind of always have this revolving number of fish. You know, we get fish, the fish die, we get new fish. So, you know.
Dragon. It's a circle of life.
Right. I don't know. Maybe that's what happens to the fish. I don't know. Like, so we have, I have three little boys. I'm just an animal around here, but it's gotcha. All right.
Well, I saw that jumped out at me. There's not many people who lead with their PT bios that lead with bearded dragon. We're talking technology and innovations in healthcare. You're also in the education. You're in academia. You're teaching PT students. How do we prepare students for the future of healthcare? Because every 10 seconds, things are just jumping and leaping forward. We've had a guy by the name of Eric Trentrock out of the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh on the show. He's all into video games, and how do we combine that with some inpatient care? What's coming next? What do we have to look forward to?
Gosh, I don't know. You know, as you kind of mentioned, and I shared with you kind of in my bio, I am kind of a self-proclaimed kind of technology junkie. I just kind of like technology and innovation. It really interests me. It really fascinates me. One of the things that I have the pleasure of doing in my position as a faculty member at Rockhurst is when I started there, one of the courses that was kind of handed to me as as the new faculty there was the, you know, the dreaded modalities course.
Oh, no.
Here's the modalities course, right? Nobody wants to teach that course. Nobody, you know, it's very, it's a difficult, you know, it's kind of become this very controversial, contentious thing in our profession. And so I took that course, and what I really decided to do with it is transform it into a clinical technologies course. And so with kind of the support of my fellow faculty and the and my chair and my dean, we still include modalities. I kind of split the course into, I call it Act 1 and Act 2. So Act 1 is kind of current technologies. And, you know, we talk about what is a technology. It's like, is it electronic? Can you plug it in? You know, is it a technology? But we talk about some of those things that the students might see those. And we talk a lot about modalities, you know, eSTEM and some of those things. And then in Act 2, we kind of get into these new and emerging technologies. And that's what I'm teaching right now. So it's really interesting you asked me this question, because this is all very front of mind. Because I, in fact, just had a session today with my students about social media and Dr. Google and health online.
Yeah.
And so we cover a variety of topics. And so, you know, it's amazing, you know, right now, some of the different topics we're covering, robotics, 3D printing, electronic health records and big data, gaming and, you know, serious gaming and virtual reality. As I said, we talked about social media and health online. I have a telehealth experience with my students where they actually do a, we do a telehealth evaluation. You know, we actually use Google, or we use FaceTime, I'm sorry. We use FaceTime to actually kind of video into a remote clinic, and the students conduct an examination and kind of an outpatient spine evaluation. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's so many new technologies that's hard to keep up with. I think what probably is really interesting to me right now, there's kind of two things that I think are really interesting. I think telehealth. I think that if we're going to need to organize a little bit as a profession, a little bit more around what it is, what it means, you know, how we deliver it. And I think payment and reimbursement is a huge piece. But I think that there's, with new technologies, there's just so many opportunities, whether it's reaching a patient in a rural setting or bringing in specialists in certain areas that can really provide that specialty expertise. I think telehealth has a lot of potential. I think another big area that we might start to see a lot more growth in, we've already seen some growth, I think, are wearables. So looking at people wearing, you know, whether it's your Fitbit or even your Apple Watch and, you know, fitness tracking, and maybe will it start to integrate into the health record, or will there be ways that, you know, your physician, your physical therapist can tap into that information? But then that gets into some really sticky questions, because, you know, a lot of times us physical therapists get to talking and we think, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we could see how many steps so-and-so took or what their heart rate was.
Right.
But at the same time, when we flip that script and we put ourselves in the role of the patient, I don't know how many of us really want our doctors to know that we only took 60 steps a day between Christmas and New Year's Day or, you know, some of those things. So it's, you know, there's a lot of really cool and interesting technologies coming, but I guess all of that of ethical liability, professional, you know, there's a lot of payment, you know, there's a lot of uncharted territory that we're going to have to work through before these things really become a reality.
Yeah. You had mentioned social media in a technology mm-hmm. role, and you require a mandatory Twitter participation of your students. How'd that come about, and how's that go over?
So I'm not doing that currently. So to be clear, I've done that in the past. I'm not doing it currently. My philosophy is that, you know, you want to make sure that whatever technology you're using, whether it's in practice or education, that it matches your objective. So when it matches the objective, I've made my students use it. So yes, I have in the past required my students in various classes to use Twitter. I set up a Facebook group for every class I teach, whether or not it's, you know, oftentimes it's just an optional space for, it's just another space for students to share information. Mm-hmm. So I do try to utilize social media in my classes, and kind of depending on the objective, what I'm trying to get, whether it's required or not, whether it's Facebook or Twitter. I have my students blog for the course I'm teaching right now. We are doing some wiki creation. So we're working space to build an author wikis. So, you know, I have done some of those things. You know, it was really interesting. I was actually just talking to my students about this today. The very first group of students that I used social media with was, I believe it was the fall of 2011. And they were required to use Twitter for a number of tweet chats. It, you know, Twitter's 140 characters. It wasn't anything too huge, but there were strong feelings about it. Some students loved it. I still have a student from that group that's still on Twitter and will still sometimes tweet at me and say, thank you so much for drawing me into this world. I'm still really involved. But there were students that felt very strongly and very passionately that it was, you know, wrong to be asked to be on social media. Social media was a personal space. To have to use it for professional purposes was just completely out of line. So it really drew some really strong reactions, but also allowed for some really rich discussion and exploration of some of those issues. I've really found, though, like I said, that was 5 years ago. And in the world of social media and technology, 5 years is a lifetime.
Yeah.
So now I feel like the students are kind of like, oh, you want us to use Facebook or Twitter or blog? Yawn. Big
right.
deal.
Been doing
you know,
that.
They don't, it's, you don't get those really strong kind of visceral reactions anymore, because I think it's just in 5 years, it's become so much more a part of students' lives. I still think we have to work hard to teach students about how to be professionals on social media and help them kind of develop a professional identity online. But I think we all have to work on that.
Sure.
You know, I've worked on that myself, you know, because we're all kind of coming of age, whatever age we are, we're all kind of coming of age together in this
social
media
world. With the technology, right.
Yeah. So we all are kind of learning, and we're making mistakes, and we're fixing them, and we're getting better. We're learning as we go, you know, and hopefully the kind of spirit that I project to the students is this is all very gray and very uncharted territory. We're all lost.
That was me leading into one thing that I actually found on your blog. There's a ton of this crime that goes unpunished, which is millennial bashing. And you had, I thought, a great quote, and it was this: it is clear that the problem isn't that millennials don't respect authority. It's just that millennials view authority differently than the generations before them. What do you mean by that? And how do you think millennials view authority differently?
You know, I love their kind of, I really think that they get bashed a lot. And I think that there's a lot of really good and positive things and about millennials and kind of how they approach work and life. And, you know, I think that millennials think that they view authority differently. I think that they've been brought up in the world. I mean, to tie it back to social media, I mean, I think a perfect example is kind of how healthcare has changed. You know, like healthcare, right, used to be this very kind of paternalistic, hierarchical model where you had the doctor who was the gatekeeper of all the information and told you what to do, and then you did it. And I think education used to be that way too. We professors were the gatekeepers of the information. We were this sage on the stage. I think now that we have so much more access to information, I think that we all kind of feel a little bit more empowered and together. And so I think that millennials have been more empowered in many ways to take charge of things like be part of their healthcare, to be part of their education, to search for information, you know, all of that access. And I just think, you know, I think that they question, they live in this very connected world. And so, and I know I can relate to this a lot too, you know, they may not necessarily want to stay at the office until 6 p.m., but they're going to go home at 4, do something with their family, hang out with their friends, but they're still going to be on their phone that night answering work emails or intimately connected, so they don't feel as, I think, obligated to punch that clock, but they also don't just punch out and turn it off. You know, it's kind of that constantly connected world. So I think that there's just a lot of, you know, kind of different ways that they approach things, which has led to, I think, some changing in the workforce just because of these different ideas. But I also think that it's led to some really positive kind of changes in us having to kind of adjust how we approach those things.
Every episode is a pint. And before we're done with pints, we do shots. So a parting shot of wisdom. If you were to talk to PT students or someone in PT who wanted to make the transition to pediatric physical therapy, what are some things that you can do to set yourself apart from some other people? Because it is pretty difficult to get a position, and there are a few and far between students or PTs who are looking to get into that particular field. You mentioned, you know, just your anecdotal stat about 10% or less. So what do you say to someone who's looking to do that?
I mean, I just encourage anybody who has an itch to try. But I also think, you know, it is really different. I always tell my students, if you go on a clinical at a big pediatric hospital and you don't love it, try a school district, try early intervention. You know, there are many different areas of pediatric PT that you can get into. And just like with adult PT, they're not all for everyone, but probably something that you can find, you know, that will work with you and kind of your goals and your values. their areas, you know, are just dying for somebody to come provide those PT services. So depending on where you are, you might have a really variety of experiences in terms of how difficult it is to get into the field. But I think that if you just, you know, I think there are lots of opportunities to learn about children and families, whether it's in your studies, doing a clinical internship, even, you know, a really great way for people, kind of new grads to start is, you know, try to pick up a weekend rotation, you know, at a local pediatric hospital, a way that a lot of people in our community can kind of get their foot in the door that way. But there's probably, no matter what kind of your goal and your philosophy is, there's probably an area of pediatric PT that you could really excel in and be really happy with.
I like that. Since you mentioned her Twitter presence and her Twitter sphere, I'd be a bad host if I didn't mention how you could follow her on Twitter. It is at Kendra PEDPT. That's Kendra PEDPT. I want to say thank you again for spending some time with us tonight. I know you got a busy schedule being a clinician in pediatric and being an associate professor at Rockhurst University. So wanted to thank you for coming on the show and sharing some wisdom within this aspect of physical therapy with us.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ. Except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.